Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Ron Feldman, VP of Product Management at Game Changer Media.
What was kind of the thought process, and was there always a plan for you, when you were getting started in your career, or have things just kind of happened organically, so to speak?
Definitely, I think the latter. I think that's true for most people. As much as you can even try to make plans, things don't necessarily go the way that you expect. So over time, I've learned to, take advantage of opportunities, work really hard, try to meet great people, figure out the path as it evolves. I think, product management is an interesting example in the sense that as it exists today, it was not something that probably really existed when I was, coming out of undergrad. So it wouldn't have been something that I could necessarily have planned to do. I definitely kind of intentionally went into technology and stayed in technology and software. But, in terms of what particular functions, that was definitely an evolution over time.
Yeah. Was it always like an innate vision? What was it about getting involved in things that has to be there for you to kind of be motivated and work towards something, I suppose? Like, for me, it's not necessarily like about the technology or, not even necessarily about money. It's kind of the challenge or the achievement, which is a lot of like layman terminology, I'm aware, that I'm throwing about there. But, it's so true in that, when you get involved and you constantly pursue things, is it like the sense of achievement, gratitude? Is it something different, quirky? Like, for you, what's looking back, what's it always kind of been that you've been chasing?
I think those are definitely elements of it. I think that I really look at what a company is doing, what its mission is, what the products are, and whether I can get excited about working hard every day to deliver on that mission, and excited about working with those people. So, where I am now, for example, Game Changer, it was very much, I'd been pursued by a lot of different companies and folks over the last years at my last job. And it was, very unique when I found the company and the product and what market we were pursuing and the people working here. And so I kind of knew that was something I really wanted to explore.
And what was it? So obviously I wanted to ask about the kind of separation and going into, I don't know the story all too well, but, when you kind of broke off and built a team of contractors and kind of did your own thing, that's, I suppose, a very entrepreneurial move on your part. I'd be curious to know like the characteristics that you kind of have in you, to have that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and try and start your own thing.
Yeah, it's actually two different things that I did. It may have been a little bit confusing overlap. So one was I co-founded a venture-backed company in San Francisco back in 2006. I ran that for 3 years, and that was kind of my entrepreneurial, my biggest entrepreneurial venture. I definitely had an entrepreneurial spirit from the time I was young. My dad has been an entrepreneur and kind of was always interested in trying things and started a couple small businesses while I was in college. Then I just saw a problem that I really thought needed a solution, and found some people who share a common vision. And we went for it. We're living in Silicon Valley and certainly had access to a lot of people and financing, and we're lucky to be able to pursue that. And that was an amazing opportunity for those 3 years. Subsequently, I was basically working on a variety of different startup ideas and small startup ventures. And in order to kind of to fund that, did a bunch of my own contracting and consulting, a little bit of subcontracting, but more, you know, more just doing that on my own. But the, you know, the entrepreneurial piece was really just a traditional venture-backed startup that was called Query. That was for, you know, 3.5 years in San Francisco.
Yeah. Well, in 2006, though, we hadn't quite seen the startup boom just yet at that point, had we, really? So I wonder whether, like, Silicon Valley had a slightly different vibe to it in 2006 than it probably does now.
Yeah, I think there were definitely different waves of startups and entrepreneurship. It felt like, I guess, probably like cascading sets of waves. At the time, it felt like a big, you know, web 2.0 is what it was called at the time. But I think paled in comparison to what would follow kind of in a, you know, 2010 kind of time frame. So there's, you know, these lulls that happened in between with the financial crisis and the dot-com crash. But after recovering from each lull, it seems that the market for startups came back stronger.
Yeah. So I want to kind of take a little bit of a step back and think about kind of as you were progressing through your career and as, you know, you became more technically inept and you held positions where you were managing people. I think for a lot of people, that kind of management role is such a big step and a particular step that is almost feels like a completely new role. What were kind of your experiences with all of a sudden having to manage people, and, you know, was there kind of a larger learning curve for you when you took that task on?
Yeah, I think that it's a surprise to most people when they become managers that they, you know, the skill set that brought you to management is likely not one that will be as relevant for being a good manager. It's a kind of a whole new job and effort. I think there's an aspect of it, you know, teaching the craft and the discipline and the function that you've grown up in. But the, you know, almost the more important piece is, you know, how to inspire people, how to let people kind of become fulfilled and become the best versions of themselves. But it takes a while to learn. And I think, you know, one of the best ways to learn is to, you know, model the behavior of those that have been your managers that you really felt were positive experiences. But it's, you know, it's a ton about psychology and really understanding people. I think the advantage of, I think, what a good product manager, what makes a good product manager, making them a good, you know, manager of people is fundamentally curiosity. And I think being curious, genuinely curious about people is something that is necessary to be a good product manager. And it's also necessary to be a good manager of people, regardless of function.
It's not for everyone. And I think, you know, there are some organizations now that are giving kind of, you know, technical people alternative paths instead of having to be forced into management. But, you know, maybe not as much of a problem for yourself, but have you probably with other people who are super skilled technically, just don't feel like there's any other way than to go into management. I think is just it is becoming a little bit of an issue, especially in technical roles. Are you kind of seeing more companies or at least hearing about more companies that are trying to make that effort to provide like an alternative route than just, you know, now you've got to a certain level, if you want the next pay grade, you have to all of a sudden manage people. Because, you know, I think, again, you know, it doesn't necessarily, just because you're the most talented doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the best manager, does it?
Yeah, no, absolutely correct. I think that, so, you know, from a technical standpoint, like here at Game Changer, we have a separate career ladder on the engineering side to advance one's career as an individual contributor. You know, I worked at Amazon where they have a similar, you know, career ladder as an individual contributor. I think it's a little bit harder on the product management side. I think that there's a cap on how far you can get as an individual contributor without kind of overseeing a broader portfolio of products. I think that you can definitely get pretty senior, but I definitely think it's a challenge in a lot of other functions of how high that ladder can go without managing people. But I agree, it's definitely not for everybody. And I think it's unfortunate a lot of people become managers that don't really enjoy it and don't really want to kind of refine their skills on that front.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And my experience is I certainly value, you know, a strong team dynamic. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, you definitely look for guidance. Was the, you know, a kind of on the job, I suppose. Not everyone has that luxury of having those resources. So I suppose, like, as you were saying, it's a great tip to kind of look back and think about the people who kind of helped you. But in still, in doing that, that's probably the best practice. But then what worked for you might not kind of work for others, you know. So it's a brutal game.
It is. It's very difficult. And I think that, you know, different people that you manage also respond better to different types of management techniques and approaches. So it's a little bit of a learning process as you, you know, hire or manage a new person, trying to figure out what works best to help them succeed.
You were talking a little bit before about Web 2.0 and, you know, the way we think, thought about technology has changed just incredibly, you know, even in the, just the last 10 years. You know, for you moving forward, maybe over the next 5-10 years, you know, what are you expecting to see change, and are you already kind of preparing for, you know, kind of what's next, maybe with, you know, the advancements in data, you know, AI, these kind of talking points at the moment?
So I think the, you know, certainly staying on top of the latest technology and trying to, as a consumer, being in the consumer technology side, trying to be a user of new technologies as well, is really important. And so trying to be in the sweet spot of anticipating the, you know, proliferation and rise of new technology versus getting too far ahead. So certainly understanding where the direction that things are going in a long-term perspective, and being a little bit ahead of mainstream society with regards to, you know, use and projection of technology. So for example, I was a very early adopter of Slack with my team at my last company, and our company currently Game Changer, we use Slack kind of religiously for better and for worse. But it's really shown, I think, what will be a major trend of a shift away from email as a primary form of communication. And understanding that is, I think, a big and important shift from a consumer tech standpoint and how people communicate, in addition to, you know, other messaging technologies, WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, et cetera, and then the social aspects of that, like Snapchat and Instagram, et cetera. So being in the forefront of where things are, where things are going, and then thinking, you know, certainly longer term about things like artificial intelligence, machine learning, and et cetera, but not jumping too far into the fray in advance.
It definitely requires a lot of energy, right, to try and constantly keep up with things. It's a point that you need to have that energy level to try and think about, so you don't get stuck in what you're doing. But it is so easy, I suppose. You know, we have to constantly remind ourselves to, you know, I think, like, say, networking, things like this are good ways of, you know, seeing what everyone's up to. You know, external feedback is always kind of the best. That's the key to it. You know, internally, you know, after you've been at an organization for a certain amount of time, it's kind of, you know, you tend to think differently about the product. You think from an internal standpoint, for example. So the external feedback is just massively necessary. So, you know, I suppose even on just a personal level, keeping up to date with the tech, you have to kind of make sure you make these efforts if you want to kind of compete, I suppose.
No, I think it's essential for sure. And I agree with you, kind of getting out of the office is essential.
Well, you know, when you say get out of the office, I literally mean, like, get out of the office and go, you know, and be in different environments, see how different things work. I think that's, you know, so important. You know, I'm not necessarily saying go to these kind of, like, you know, networking events or anything, but just, like, see something different, you know, go be in and around something different, meet different people. You know, it just really allows you to continuously draw perspective and kind of make sure that you're kind of working in the right direction with what aligns with your goals and kind of vision. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, going back to doing some the contracting and stuff like that. Aligning the vision for people, I think, when they're on, like, permanent workers, for example, you know, it's pretty obvious that they have to be bought into what the company is working towards and what the company is trying to achieve. Just out of curiosity, I suppose, is it more difficult with contractors? Is it more kind of coming in and just to get the job done? or do you think that they still have to kind of align with what the company's working towards?
No, I think they still do. So just to clarify, I haven't had a ton of experience. There might have been a little miscommunication about the contractors. But definitely, we've employed a couple of contractors here, and I've had a little bit of experience over my career. But it sounds like there might have been a little bit of overemphasis on that from your colleague. But anyway, I definitely think, you know, my theory in general on contractors when I've hired them in the past is to try to integrate them as much as possible into the company, and treat them, and certainly within the constraints of law, but get them to feel a part of the team, you know, and so ideally even having them, you know, co-located in the office is a part of that. But certainly I think that there's a psychological benefit to having somebody being a full-time part of the team. So I think that it's a worthwhile goal to get people, to get great people to join the team full-time. I think that, you know, when there are skills or people that can't be brought onto the team and you need to augment the team, I think contracting can be a valuable technique, but only in certain circumstances.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. Clearly, slight miscommunication there, but no big deal.
No worries.
Continuing for you, so like if I was to come to you, for example, you know, and ask for like advice on like, right, I really want to kind of do what you've done, you know, what advice would you give me?
You know, the things that come back to me are being genuinely curious and talking to people, like you said, of all stripes. You never know kind of where an opportunity is going to kind of present itself. And that fundamentally, it's all about people. Whether those people thinking about how you can actually solve problems for people with technology. And in order to do that, really spending time with those people and empathizing with them. And then in order to do that well, finding the right set of people to work with and the right team. And there's, you know, most people are not going to be the right people, and you have to do a lot over time to seek the right people. But when you find someone you trust or you believe in, kind of maintaining that relationship and maintaining that relationship in a way that is relatively selfless. So if you take that curiosity and, you know, let's say you just told me earlier that you used to be really interested in swimming. And then I know you live in the London area. So let's say, you know, tomorrow I came across, you know, a swimming group or somebody I know that really was involved in swimming or triathlons in London. I would reach out and make that introduction for you. Not for any other reason than I remembered that was something that was interesting. And I would hope that would be beneficial for you. And, you know, I would hope that you would, you know, do the same thing. And I think that there are many people that would, but that notion of having that interest and that curiosity and it being genuine, so that I actually like remember that detail about you, and because I find it interesting to learn new things about people, and then maintaining that connection on the basis of that, you know, connection and genuine kind of conversation and exchange of ideas and interests.
Yeah, it's a great point. I think that there's way too much transactional these days, and not enough kind of personal. I was having a conversation the other day actually with someone, and you know, it's becoming kind of a classic conversation to have. It's like, you know, you go to a conference or something where people are congregating to kind of network and meet people, and they said that they looked around the room and there's 95% of people were sat there looking at the phones talking to other people who weren't there. So you know, we're in this kind of interesting space at the minute where, you know, when we have the opportunity to connect people and genuinely, you know, get to know people, and we don't seem to be seizing it, even though we have the opportunity now to connect with more people than ever. Everything's still, people are kind of using it as just a scalable way to be transactional, which I suppose is fine, of course. But when you have the opportunity on a social or, you know, a person-to-person level, yeah, I think these are great tips, and I think it serves you well in the future as well. And it's, and again, be genuine about it. You know, I think at the same time, you know, don't ask if you don't care. You know, if you're all about transaction and you genuinely don't care, then I suppose be that way. I'd encourage people to just remain that way. You know, maybe work on Wall Street or something.
No, I hear you. I agree. I think being genuine and genuinely curious is hugely important. And I think what you said about being present and being mindful. And so when you're having a conversation with somebody, regardless of whether it's you know, on the phone or in person, and regardless of whether you have another device distracting you, be present, be 100% involved in that conversation. Ask a question because you want to hear the answer, and then listen, truly listen to that answer and engage. And I think, again, I think it's a very good lesson both for how to go about life personally and professionally, and also about how to really empathize with customers and kind of build good products for them. So I think those types of skills are really important, and they're really, you know, building for the long run. And like you said, not being transactional and focused on what do I want to get today at this particular time from this person, and is this person going to give me something valuable versus, you know, everybody has something unique about them. I'm genuinely going to find out what it is and hear about this person's story because I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah, I think, you know, the transactional stuff comes from that. You know, I think it will come. I think if you put that stuff later, you know, whatever you're trying to achieve transactionally or whatever that X is, you know, it will come because people will want to work with you, will want to connect with you, you know, will be more motivated to kind of go out the way and do stuff for you. So it all falls hand in hand, but again, make it a genuine thing. If it's not there, don't let it be there. It's a great point to kind of finish on, Ron. Thank you so much for taking the time today. I'll have to thank Michael for putting me on to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I apologize for the technical difficulties in the beginning.
No, it's all right. It's all right. Skype can be a nightmare. We get it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ron, thank you so much for taking the time. Have a great rest of the day. And
thank you.
I'm sure we'll talk again soon, mate. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website, venturi-group.com, and keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.